Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Sheesh. Every time I think we've seen it all, Hell's Kitchen manages to sneak up and kick me right in the balls.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 110 for the week of March 28th, 2016. I am blind as a Batman, David T. Cole, and I'm here with vigilante accent, Sarah D. Bunting.
For it is always a little to vengeance.
Underutilized Latina, Joe Reed.
Because I'll bandage that arm.
Sleazy D.A. Tar Ariano.
I'll bury your crappy little firm for some reason.
And avocado at law, Jeff Alexander.
Abrogado.
Well, arp.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Hot Great, episode 110. My name is Dave Cole. I am your host. I want to say at the top of the show that we are making inroads behind the scenes, being all businessy and trying to get this podcast and our other podcasts, our fledgling podcast network, up on some real advertising networks now that they are starting to form. Now that podcasts are looking like they actually might be a legitimate business, we are trying to make that happen. So we are talking to some people, and hopefully we'll be able to combine sort of the user ads with some more kind of, you know, I don't know, real ads in the future that will make these podcasts self-sufficient, which they definitely are not right now. And here's our problem. When we get new listeners, they do stick around. Our stats show that. But we do a really piss-poor job of actually trying to get new listeners. So we need your help. And what we would like you to do, if you are so inclined, is go on iTunes and give us a glowing 5-star review. That'll help us with new people getting into the podcast.
If you feel weird about it, a 4-star review is fine. But come on, nothing lower than that. Don't be a jerk.
5-star review on iTunes. And also, if you would not mind, if you could send us some love via Twitter and Facebook to all your followers, that would be great. Also, let's say if you're at a wedding and the priest asks, speak now or forever hold your peace, why not use that time to plug the Previously TV Podcast Network? If we can boost our audience, we could probably get on board with one of the many podcast ad networks that are popping up. And if we can do that, we can expand our podcast offerings too. So there's something in it for you beyond just helping us eat and keep the servers up. So we love doing them, but they take a long time to produce and record and plan. So with your help, we can make a little extra dough and fund further podcast endeavors. All right, end of ad. Let's get to it. Let's our lead topic. I was sick last week, so I apologize. So this is a little stale.
That is our lead topic, Dave's sickness.
Yes.
How was Dave feeling last
week? Let's talk about tummy troubles. Let's talk about possible ulcers. No, we're going to talk about Daredevil. It's kind of weird to think that we actually might have like talking about it beyond expiry date. Literally like 9 days after it launched or whatever.
Well, we're still covering on previously.tv.
I know, but just the fact that, you know, Netflix and Amazon, they changed the game so much that, you know, with these sort of like barf them all out at once, you know, way of doing it, that
enough about your sickness, Dave.
The people that watch, you know, the people that are inclined to talk about it the most have already consumed it.
Yeah.
Not that there's not a fun discussion to be had, but it's just kind of weird to think that like 4 years ago that this would have been the way it went.
Speaking of that fun discussion, let us welcome belatedly our guest, Jeff Alexander. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, thank you, Jeff.
Welcome back to the podcast. Jeff is one of the many people covering Daredevil episode by episode on previously.tv, including, if I am not mistaken, the season in review. So you're actually going to have to wrap everything all up later this week. Is that right, Jeff?
Correct. I will try not to repeat myself too much.
I think it's okay if you do. Right. So yeah, Daredevil, we watched all of it last weekend, and I'm just going to say shout out to Crayola for publishing the Folk Art Escapes coloring book, because that's 80% of what got me through that entire run of the show. Yeah. I think we got to episode 4 on like Friday night, and then on Saturday morning, we were like, well, let's just at least watch episode 5 because a major character appears at the end of episode 4. And then, you know, we'll see how it goes. And then we just kept watching it. We watched the whole entire thing. And it's weird because I think that's the okayest show that Dave and I have watched every episode of that neither of us was really that excited about. Jeff is our guest. How do you feel about this season?
Well, I think it was inevitable that there would be sort of a come down from the first season. You know, last year was such a sort of a phenomenon just all over Twitter and social media. And it was like, oh my God, Daredevil. You know, and part of that is because there were such high low expectations for it, just because the movie had not done so well 10 years before. But this season, I think it was a lot to live up to, especially there was a new showrunner behind the scenes. You know, there's a lot of, you know, stuff to, you know, to try and repeat. Like there was another, for instance, the big hallway fight this year. You know, now it's in a stairwell. And plus, you know, it's part of a much bigger thing now because, you know, then it was just Daredevil and now it's part of this whole Defenders thing with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist. So it had a lot more that it had to accomplish. And I don't know that it accomplished everything as successfully. But overall, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. I got through it. I'll have more to say in my season interview.
No, you should just do that, Jeff. That's it. 10 word review.
I think we just found our next t-shirt design for Glarkware Day.
Oh, awesome.
Now, Joe, you had big problems with John Bernthal. Why don't you speak on that?
Yeah, so I didn't watch the first season. And then after I saw and loved Jessica Jones, I was sort of more... I entertained brief thoughts about going back and watching Daredevil. And I'm like, yeah, there's a new season coming on soon enough. I'll just hop on that. So I did. And I had my hopes sort of raised for this show just because I felt like I was into the universe, and almost immediately I get like slapped in the face with one of my least favorite television actors, John Bernthal, who's playing the Punisher in this. He was the hell was his name on Walking Dead?
Who cares?
Shame.
That guy.
Shame.
Yes. God, that fucking guy.
I thought you said shame. I was like, yeah.
Basically true. And I feel like he gets cast in a lot of things now lately. And it's always some sort of variation on this angry rage ball who ends up being sort of the might makes right voice of
He was an angry rage ball in that noir crime show that was on for like 2 seconds. Remember that?
Whatever the real show of Darkness at Noon was.
Yeah.
No, it was the real show of L.A. Noir, which they had to rename.
Because of the video game.
Because there was a video game by that name. Yeah. The book was excellent. Written by my college friend, John Bunton, a relation.
Nice.
But yeah, the show, and he was a part of the problem. So
yeah, I feel like he feeds into... somehow these sort of TV expectations of this kind of tough guy that audiences can get behind. And like, I've seen a lot of people really like the Punisher character in this season of Daredevil. So like, maybe people are onto something, but like, it's exactly the kind of character that turns me off in this sort of, not only like, we're going to have to find ways because it's 2016. Now we're going to have to find a lot of ways to like talk about this kind of, you know, violent male aggressor as like avenging angel kind of character. And it's like, I don't like the kind of character. I'm really not going to like the kind of character if we have to talk it to death. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's not making it better for me. I feel like that's what all these reviews of Batman versus Superman sound like, the same thing to me, where it's just like, well, not only is it going to be grim and remorseless and just like big two, you know, tanks thundering away at each other, but we're going to talk a lot about what that means. Yeah. And it's just like, that's not making it better. That's like doubling down on the thing that I don't like.
Well, I will come to his defense in this one regard, which is that is the Punisher character. Like I grant you, he does play that same character. I mean, when you have a face like that, like, he looks like a bruiser, right? You know, like
he does. He's definitely.
Yeah.
Except when you're an ACLU lawyer on Show Me a Hero. That was his other big role last summer, a little bit away from his normal type with glasses.
Yeah, but the Punisher character for the comic books, that's what he does. He goes around and he shoots people and he doesn't really care about the right or wrong of it. It's just he's a results-oriented individual, Joe. And, you know, they captured that part of it. Now, whether the Punisher as a character is a success, you know, he's pretty one note, obviously.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of single notes being played in this TV in this series.
That is true.
That he punishes. That's his thing. But it was like like I'm saying in my article, he has a lot in common with Shane from The Walking Dead, in that they're both this kind of character who embodies this sort of thinly disguised bloodlust that they're trying to cover with, well, not even trying to cover, but arguing that it's what needs to be done, that it's what necessary. That's what's necessary. But, you know, it's tough to have that debate with a guy who looks like John Bernthal.
And if you want to, like, to compare and contrast, if you watch Punisher,
Warzone?
Pardon me?
Was it Warzone?
Yeah, maybe. With the guy from Rome, Ray Stevenson. Yeah.
Stevenson, yes.
It'll make this Daredevil look like a puppy dog. Like, that movie was so over-the-top violent and such a pulpy... And when I say pulpy, I mean people's bodies kind of way being turned into red mist and sinew bits. You know, it'll make this guy seem really kind of friendly and cuddly. But my biggest problem with this season was, you know, like somebody said, all right, well, the big thing about this season is going to be dispensing justice. Where is the line between, you know, vigilantism and, you know, doing the right thing and blah, blah, blah. And Daredevil draws a line repeatedly, at least 5 times an episode, at whatever you need to do, but you just can't kill them. And I'm going to go out of my way, not only for myself not to kill, but I'm going to make sure you don't kill too, other people involved. And oh my God, it's so trying. His no-kill policy goes right up to no-kill. Like, if he can get somebody...
He's the technical version of killing people.
...to be in a coma for the rest of their lives from the brain damage he creates by smashing their head into the ground repeatedly, as long as they don't die, as long as they got Auntie Joan coming to the hospital to feed them applesauce every day, somehow that's okay, you know, for Daredevil. And
it gets right in under the wire for the code.
Yeah. And it's just like it's such a, like, they're trying to contrast, but we have like White and Mother of Pearl. Like, that's the contrast here between between Daredevil and the Punisher. Like, okay, Daredevil just seems to be like, I mean, the Punisher seems to be a Daredevil that does mercy killings. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, come on, Daredevil, don't lead him like that.
That's watching Batman Begins was on yesterday, and I caught the end of it. And it was the part on the train where he's got Liam Neeson on the train, and he goes, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you either. And then he just, like, pieces out, and then the train crashes. And it's just like, I'm not seeing entirely the distinction here between, like, A and B.
Yeah, Daredevil's whole thing seems to me of a piece of, like, that they, and I don't want to disparage comic books. I don't read them. I understand people get a lot of pleasure from them, whatever. But, like, that just seems, that whole note seems like a comic book thing where it's like, we have to make these character notes, you know, very black and white, or else people might not get it. And the similar sort of thing in terms of plotting that really bugged me this season, and I have to say took me out of it for almost the rest of it, even though I sat there and continued to watch it, was when in the episode where Punisher has Daredevil tied up, and then he, like, wakes up after he's been unconscious for a while, and then he's like, didn't you want to take my mask off? And he's like, oh, I didn't care who you were. What? Come on. He was sitting right there. You're not going to just take off his little helmet just because you can't be bothered. You were just sitting there waiting for him to wake up. Stupid. That was just plain stupid. And that was only for the plot, and it made no sense. That's not how any person would act, including a comic book villain.
That is incredibly fair.
Thank you.
I feel like my version of, like, getting mad for something like that, my version of that is the continued depiction of Hell's Kitchen, which I get that, like, this version of Hell's Kitchen might as well be, like, an entirely fictional place.
Yeah. Yes.
But
it's so funny to, like, because not, like, it's not, not only is it just, like, not Hell's Kitchen, but, like, Hell's Kitchen right now, my vision of that place is just, like, tank top gays walking five abreast on a street, yeah, making you feel bad about your body, and like big, like giant muscle guys walking their teeny tiny little dogs. Like, yeah, that is, yeah, Hell's Kitchen.
Like,
I gotta get back to my $1.8 million condo.
Yeah. Honest to Christ.
I mean, at, like, at best, Daredevil would be breaking up a scuffle at the Chipotle.
Exactly.
Oh God, not that Chipotle. I go to that one all the time.
Yeah.
This traffic on Sunday going into the Lincoln Tunnel is murder.
The other thing is that, like, how many superheroes does Hell's Kitchen need, you know, protecting Hell's Kitchen? I always kind of wanted to see like a scene in Daredevil where the crime starts in Hell's Kitchen, but then like
moves to the East Village
outside of Hell's Kitchen, like, you know, it moves into Tribeca or something like that. And Daredevil just like stops, like, oh,
yeah,
sorry. And he like gets on his phone, he calls, you know, whatever, he calls Killdozer, and Killdozer, it's like, yeah, okay, I'll pick it up, you know, he's out of my jurisdiction, I'm gonna go back
there
home.
There was an interview that I read before this season about whether Luke Cage and Jessica Jones were going to show up on this season of Daredevil, and they were talking about Luke Cage, and they're like, well, Luke Cage is up in Harlem, and I'm like, Harlem's walkable from Hell's Kitchen, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, he's not in a different state.
Yeah, are there, like, checkpoints?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And especially when you're Luke Cage, because if you're Luke Cage and you have that, you know, that skin that you can't, you know, harm, you just, like, get cars to hit you faster. Yeah. You stand in the middle of the road, you ask that semi-truck to come down and really slap you, and you got, like, two blocks in, like, 10 seconds.
It's true. Yeah.
One other thing we need to talk about, since Sarah brought it up in her intro, is that accent, though. Oh, my God, it's so terrible. Daredevil's accent. Not even over the place. It's just in one place, and that place is Ireland.
Yeah.
Excellent. I mean, he's going to... Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think he's a bad actor at all. I think I generally like him, but yeah, it is. There are accent issues for sure.
Yeah, why not just have him be so... Irish? Like, yeah, you know where there's a couple fucking Irish people? New York City. You know where they all live? Hell's Kitchen, and also my neighborhood, and they go to the cop bar. But anyway,
just 10 bar at Rosie O'Grady's, it'd be fine.
What do we think about Elektra?
Eh.
Yeah.
Eh? Is that the consensus?
I wanted to like her a lot more than I did.
Yeah,
same
here.
Yeah, this season sort of had like that Batman Returns problem of too many people.
Yeah. Through a lot of the season, I was thinking, I mean, contrasting it to Jessica Jones,
yeah,
what I was so bored about was that it was about men and who cares? Like, I don't want to generalize that stories about women are just automatically better, because I feel like I don't need to say that, and we all agree. However, the exception to that is Elektra, who I thought was very boring.
Can I qualify that?
No.
Okay.
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Hey, it's your game.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the reason Jessica Jones is interesting beyond just being like, you know, a well put together show, mm-hmm, was that it was something different and rare in the comic book genre. Relatively normal woman centric POV story set, right, in the super, you know, hero world.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just Batman for Marvel people.
Well, yeah. I mean, her trauma happened to herself, so automatically it's a more, you know, it's a more personal story, yeah, and she has more to gain and lose from getting past it, like, than, you know, as you say, the Batman story of like, but my parents were killed. I'm not as interested in that, sorry. Jesus. But
also,
yeah.
Can we not sideline our best actress in an emergency room for the entirety,
yes,
of this season?
Yes.
Good Lord. Like, I'm so, every time Rosario Dawson's on, I'm into it. I'm like, I really like that character. I really like that character when she was on Jessica Jones for an episode. And like, they seem to be like adamantly refusing to give her any kind of real entry point into the series. And that's annoying.
Yeah. Lisa Schmeiser had a great story that went up today as we record this about episode 10 and about why Claire is such a great character on Daredevil, which I very much agree with. So check that out on previously.tv. Well, I don't know if I need to watch more of the show. I mean, if I assume that there's going to be a third season, I'm not sure I'm going to watch it. Sarah?
I quit after two episodes. That said, I liked those two episodes more than I liked the part of season one that I watched. In the sense that if, like, my husband were like, but I want to watch the whole thing, that I wouldn't be actively angry and I would just sit there knitting as you colored. And it would be fine.
Yeah.
But there were enough annoying things in it. John Bernthal, my issue with him is that you just are reminded that he really is the poor man's Fred Ward. And it's like, well, what is
that? Oh, my God, you're right.
Yes.
Like, oh, actual Fred Ward is not coming. to play his dad, Punisher Senior. I don't know, Popisher. So like, boo. And like, I don't care. Like, I like the Daredevil actor, accent struggles aside.
Yeah.
But I just don't like everyone else, every other, like all the gingers in the story. And it's just so like self-serious about this micro interpretation of its morality. And I don't have time, so I will not be back until we have to, you know, talk about it next year on Extra Hot Great, at which time I will be saying exactly the same things.
Yeah, probably. Joe?
Yeah, I feel like if I only watched the first, I think, 7, so I read ahead a little bit on the Wikipedia page. And if they bring Foggy into Jerry Hogarth's Law thing, like, yeah, it seems to suggest that they are, like, that'll be enough sort of crossover for me. I feel like if they go into that with Jessica Jones, like, that's the show that I really like.
Foggy's hair, not acceptable.
Yeah. Oh, no,
he's got to cut that if he's going to go into the big leagues.
Yeah, no,
it's true.
Yeah,
I can see that. That'll be like a first episode thing where Jessica's like, not on my watch, not with that hair. Like, you can go get a haircut.
Jeff, you've been paid to watch both of these seasons. Why don't you take us home?
You know, whether it's good or not is almost irrelevant, given that it's all this sort of whole universe that Marvel is building, and yeah, they've got our hooks in us. So I'm probably going to be back next season, whether I like it or not. Like we were saying earlier about, his no kill policy, I'm torn about it. I mean, it does up the degree of difficulty for Daredevil. I mean, he could just walk in and mow people down like the Punisher does. But, you know, he's not, that's not his thing. So, yeah. But on the other hand, it also makes him look a little silly sometimes, like when he's threatening the guy from the hand and saying, you know, I'm going to find your bosses and I'm going
to tickle him real hard.
Yeah.
They're going to pee their pants.
Stop or I'll say stop again. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a Robin Williams joke.
Soon there's going to be no more competitors when all of them are gone. Face Off is ready.
Hey, Liv.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching Season 10, Episode 11 of Face Off.
And I got a special surprise. It was semi-finale or something like that today.
Is it? I don't even know.
Next episode is semi-finale, so it's semi-semi-finale.
Perfect. Can you describe the challenge for us?
So today, their makeup was inspired by World of Warcraft. So they had to choose one of the characters and turn it into a character that would be suitable to go into a creature movie.
Right. So they took the actual characters from the video game and showed them pictures, and then they had to make a makeup that would go into a movie, because I guess there's a World of Warcraft movie coming out.
And the winner gets to put theirs on the movie. No,
that wasn't a thing. Have you heard of World of Warcraft before?
Nope. It's nothing popular by my old school. Or my school.
Kids at your school, it's not popular?
No. The most thing around is sports and Shopkins.
What kind of video games do you like to play?
I like Fruit Ninja.
It's at Shopkins. I don't know what that is.
That is a fun game.
And I don't even know if it's a video game.
Yes, that's considered a video game.
Okay. Then I like it.
That one's your favorite?
Yeah.
What's your favorite iPad game?
There's a game that I'm playing right now. It's the Malaponi Equestria Games thingy. And I just unlocked Sweet Apple Acres. Oh, no, not Sweet Apple Acres, the Astro Pony.
Perfect. In today's episode, some of the contestants loosely based their inspiration off of the characters from the video game, so they only kind of looked like the video game characters. And then some contestants made, like, an exact replica.
So they jumped out of the movie, "Hey guys, I'm here for the tea party."
Yes. Which do you think was a better technique?
I don't like any of those techniques, because if it was exactly the same, it wouldn't be fit for a creature movie. It would just be out of the game. And if it's loosely based, then it doesn't look complete.
Would you, if you were on this challenge, would you make your character look exactly like the one in the movie?
No, because if it's like that, it won't be unique. People will think it's the director or whoever worked on the movie made it. They won't know it was me.
That's a good point. Can you pause it for a second? You can tell that they recorded this on Easter and that Liv has been eating chocolate for about 7 hours straight. Yeah. All right, proceed.
They had one of the World of Warcraft game maker dudes on the show, and he was giving everyone advice, and Mel asked a lot of questions. Do you think that worked out for her?
Well, I guess it did, because she ended up on the top. She had no experience on the game, and after winning immunity, she felt like she had to do something big.
Do you think she was successful?
Yep. That looked pretty much like a troll, and one of the most standouts is the red hair. Trolls like to show off their hair, so that was really successful.
Who is your favorite for this episode?
I really liked Walters. He made a Draenei.
That sounds right to me.
A Draenei.
Yep, sounds good.
So he had a tentacles, a crown, and they each had blue and purple and white spots, almost like a leopard or a cheetah with the blue and purple and a white base.
That one really looked like it just stepped right out of the game. He did a perfect replica of the character from the game.
Okay, because it isn't as cartoony, I guess.
Who is the winner this week?
Guess what? It's Walter.
You sound so thrilled. Yes, Walter did win. And who ended up going home?
It was Yvonne. Come on. From Canada.
They're not going to keep somebody just because they're Canadian.
No,
they're not. I think that because it came down to Yvonne and Melissa, and I think overall, Melissa is truly a better artist. So even though Melissa's character wasn't as great as Yvonne's, it doesn't make sense to get rid of Melissa before Yvonne.
Yeah, because Melissa, remember last challenge, her reptile?
It was amazing.
So it doesn't really make sense to force her to leave after that.
Who are you going to go for now that Yvonne's gone?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you can think about it and tell us next week.
I'll go for everyone who's good.
That sounds good to me. Thanks for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome, and we'll see you next week for Face Off.
Back to my cream eggs, says Liv. All right.
Growing up so fast.
We have a message courtesy of Leah, not my sister, a different Leah. We have a micro game time super bestie password.
We've got a list of TV besties, and we're going to try to match up pairs.
All right, I'll start.
I believe Picky told you to start.
Yes. Rachel.
Monica.
You got it.
Maggie.
Oh, Emma.
Correct.
Romy.
Oh, Michelle. They had a TV movie.
They did.
Leslie.
Oh, Anne. Rory.
Rory. Lane.
Yep.
Abby.
Oh, Alana. Christina.
Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Lemon.
Oh, Jenna Maroney, obviously. Buffy.
There you go. Willow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Megan.
Her box.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Julie. Diaz.
Her motorcycle.
That's right.
Tara.
Sarah. And.
Oh.
Leah.
Anna.
Classic best friend couples for the ages, though one probably wouldn't be a garbage person and miss the other's 26th birthday. Sounds like there's some backstory there.
Happy birthday to one half of the Spiral Sisters, consumer of U2 and Fish through podcast form only, a Princess Starta, and a true Food Network star.
Anna, Leah loves you and hopes that you have the best day spiral free. Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Woohoo! Nice segue.
That music can only mean one thing, and that's that it's time for The Blotter Presents Today I have a couple of notes on the original Helter Skelter, which, as you may or may not remember, is a 1976 two-night miniseries about Charles Manson and the Tate LaBianca killings. The 40th anniversary of this blessed true crime event is this coming Friday, April 1st. Weird. I will be posting a full write-up on previously.tv later in the week, but for right now, three things that are important to know about the original Helter Skelter, not the 2004 original or the remake, which is why I had never watched the original, because I hated the 2004 one with Jeremy Davies so very much. The first reason is that Steve Railsback is brilliant as Charles Manson. He has this one, like, typically Mansonianly bonkers speech on the stand at the end, shot in very tight close-up, and he almost sort of convinces you that his helter-skelter logic is logic and not him being bonkers, or at least you sort of see why the whole family, like, cohered around this, like, one kernel of charisma. It's a very good performance, and Steve Railsback also played Ed Gein, who was one of the bases for Hannibal Lecter. So talk about leaning into your typecasting. Thumbs up on that guy. The second thing to know, if you rent it from iTunes or whatever, is that it takes a little while to get going. There's this one sequence where, like, Roman Polanski's business manager has to go and identify a bunch of the bodies. And he sees Sharon Tate, and we don't see her for that long. It's a very brief clip. I think they couldn't even show what happened to her on network at that time. So then he has to run through, like, four rooms of this house and back out the front door and back around so that he's standing in front of a living room window so we can see him horror barfing. The whole sequence takes, like, a week, and you're like, it's a murder scene. Like, we got it. Can we get to the part where Vincent Bugliosi solves everything? We do. He does. And then they're at the trial, and the trial judge, I was watching this with my husband, and he immediately spotted the guy as an actor named Skip Hohmeyer, who Star Trek original series fans might remember as Dr. Severin, who played this, like, hippie guru type in some episode, and he has these unbelievable vagina ears that will be in the visual aids for my write-up. So those are a few appealing things to know about Helter Skelter, which is, it holds up after 40 years, I was surprised to find. So I recommend it.
Thanks.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara C. Ariano.
I'm so happy. Married at First Sight, the first year, is back after its mid-season break. Cool. Married at First Sight is the show, when Stephanie Green was on, she was talking about it a little bit, because she covers the new marriages. They've tried this two more times since the first season, but Married at First Sight, the first year, is with the two couples from the very first season that stayed married. One that actually seems to be so happy that they have to give them these incredibly boring storylines that are obviously completely fake to talk about, because otherwise there's no reason to watch them. They're fine. And another couple who hate each other. They are fascinating. They are, for some reason, still married. This is Jamie Otis, formerly a Bachelor contestant, who then went on to also be on Bachelor Pad, and then was on Married at First Sight, and now is on Married at First Sight the first year, and has a book coming out this year about her experiences in marriage called Wifey 101. No, I'm not joking. It's coming out in June. I will be reading it. I can't wait. And the fact that she's writing a book about marriage is hilarious if you watch the show, because she's terrible at it and her husband can't stand her and she can't stand him either. Yet cannot stop talking about how she wants to have a baby with him, like, yesterday. It's such a good slash terrible show. It's one of my favorite shows to hate. She's endlessly fascinating because she's so screwed up and yet has no self-awareness at all. So it's a lot of fun to watch her and analyze her in a mean way. I really am only mentioning this because I want more people to watch it, because I need more people to talk about it with. You don't understand how fascinating it is. It's on FYI Tuesdays at 9 p.m. and I am covering it on previously.tv. So that is my sub plug. But I also want to plug are again with this podcast on Hollywood Game Night, which Joe and I have been doing. The season finale for season four airs this Sunday, April 3rd. So that will be our last podcast. So check that out. We are really, really hoping it moves off of Sundays because it's a big pain in the ass. So let's all get together and mail, I don't know, cocktails and sensible shoes to NBC and convince them to put it back on Tuesdays where it belongs.
Jeff Alexander.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about comic book adaptations earlier, and if we haven't had enough of that. but switching to DC from Marvel and a show that is pretty much the opposite of Daredevil, Supergirl, tonight on CBS, 8 p.m., it's going to be a crossover episode with The Flash. Probably a lot of people already know about this, but I've been looking forward to this to a kind of an embarrassing degree for several weeks. It's on tonight. I'll be covering it for Previously.tv. My Particles article will be up tomorrow morning, and should be fun. You know, Supergirl is kind of a more of a bright, optimistic character. The Flash is kind of the same way. I think a lot of the things that make The Flash work make Supergirl work, so it'll be interesting to see how they work together. So looking forward to that. And join me.
I don't watch either of those shows, but I have to say the Instagram pictures of Grant Gustin and Melissa Benoist on the set, like just goofing around and being cute together, are so winning and adorable. They are charming.
The promos have been incredibly charming too on TV, the ones that I've seen.
I have a Supergirl question for you, Jeff. We were playing a game last night with some guests that are at our place right now. Actually, previously TV writer Dan McEachern. His family
we'll be
is
on
here.
The podcast next week.
Yep. So one of the questions that came up was we had to describe a bizarre superhero. I obviously put Bizarro, well, bizarre comic book character. I put Bizarro, you know, because it's right there. And their daughter who was here was saying that Bizarro was like some alien or something on the TV show. Has he been
on the in the comic books? I think Bizarro is an alien from a like
he's from Bizarro Land or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the Supergirl version is different. Maxwell Lord, who is the bad guy played by the Fatch, developed a clone of Supergirl. It's a terrible plan, but his plan was to have this evil Supergirl replace the real Supergirl so everyone would hate Supergirl, and it's very much a dog's breakfast of a plan. But anyway, so she became this clone of Supergirl, and then Supergirl beat her up, and she was damaged, and she looked all crusty like, you know, Bizarro from the comics. So she's essentially like an artificial life form that was created.
But the character doesn't do everything opposite. It's not that silly.
No, it's not. No, not. I mean, a little, but not too much. I mean, she's bad where Supergirl is good, and she has, you know, heat breath instead of heat vision, and you know, freeze vision instead of heat vision. So,
I mean, we all have heat breath. I hope.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And she eats with her bum and poos out of her mouth. Got it.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic segue to me. That's fantastic. So I am here. Yeah, there's just no recovering from that.
Sorry. You don't sound sorry.
Tell you what show doesn't have heat breath coming out of its bum is The Real O'Neills on HBO or at HBO ABC. I'm so thrown off. It's a family sitcom about a Irish Catholic family in Chicago. And the middle son comes out as gay in the first episode, and it is in line with the ABC. ABC's really kind of killing it with family sitcoms these days, I feel like. I would put it up there with like Blackish and Fresh Off the Boat as shows that I really, really enjoy and shows that I feel like consistently kind of show up Modern Family, which is still inexplicably like the crown jewel in ABC's comedy, you know, universe, but honestly, like shows like The Real O'Neills, I find incredibly like fun and charming. And as comedy sort of is trending closer towards these kind of auteurist, sad, kind of melancholy things that you'll find on like FX or Netflix or whatever, I find myself more and more drawn to these like very kind of traditional in concept family comedies, but like all of them, like HBO has done a really good job of being like, well, you know, family comedies are what works, and we're going to give you family comedies, but with this sort of ever widening umbrella of what constitutes family for television these days, which is like so fun and so, you know, kind of refreshing. And the show is incredibly well cast. It's got three, it's, you know, Martha Plimpton and J.R. Ferguson are the parents, and then it's three kids, and all three kids are really funny and interesting characters, which is so rare for, you know, family sitcoms. I feel like family sitcoms tend to live and die with the kids, and sometimes when the kids, often when the kids are annoying, like it makes it really hard to like the show. So I would, you know, highly recommend this one to anybody who's – it's only had like five episodes so far. So it's really easy to just like jump right in. There's obviously no like impediment to jumping right into a sitcom like this one. And but all its episodes are on Hulu, and I would watch all of them today. They're really good.
And what's your plug, Joe?
Oh, yeah, and my plug. So at Decider.com, I have been recapping the YouTube-only Untucked episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race, their after show called Untucked. And I that's a show that sort of went off of used to be on Logo right after the show, right after Drag Race, and now it's gone to YouTube only, and it's gotten only better. So it's my favorite thing that I'm writing these days. So Decider.com, every Tuesday afternoon, you'll find it there.
Sarah.
Well, it's no heat breath coming out of my bum segue, but I'm glad that Joe brought up Untucked. I'm a little mad that it moved to YouTube, but I'm not a crackpot. I don't have time to watch Drag Race and Untucked every week. So sometimes I just watch Untucked because it really has gotten better. I love like black and white, verite, like Wiseman feel of it. I feel like it's way less forced and like with the,
yes,
you know, see what's in your big pink box that they used to have. Like, was it more convenient when I didn't have to switch between like media? I guess, but I don't really have to switch between media now. I can watch both of them on my laptop should I feel the urge. And Untucked, if you don't have time to watch both in a week, is, I feel, a perfectly good substitute. It's not that I don't love seeing the guest judges and Visage's butt chest and seeing how cleverly the challenges are put together, but I can live without it. What I'm really there for is the queens getting real and showing me like how the sausage is tucked, as it were. So I think it's a great show, and if you only have time for one, I think you're okay with 21 minutes of Untucked on YouTube. It's on the Worlds of Wonder channel, but just Google it and it'll come up.
Yeah.
My plug is for a new podcast that I am doing with frequent guest and EHG contributor Mark Blankenship called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. It will shock you to learn that we talk about songs. One song each episode, and we would love to hear your suggestions for songs. It is okay to suggest a song that we might hate or that you know we will hate. I can't believe no one has asked us to talk about Soulja Boy yet, but it's probably coming. So definitely tweet at us and follow us at Talk Songs. And our latest episode dropped on Friday. It's about Madonna's Get Together. And we hope that we will that you will get together with it and your ears.
Nice.
Sunday night, 2,000 pounds of raging terror, stalking its prey by night, killing anything that comes in its way. It takes a special breed of man to track down a grizzly with a taste for blood. A man like Clint Walker, Night of the Grizzly. 7 Eastern on the Superstation Sunday night.
What?
All right, that music means it's time for the canon's evil twin, the No-Nack. The No-Nack is a terrible episode of an otherwise quality show. Jeff Alexander has this week's submission.
All right. Well, I'm going out on a limb here. I should start by saying that maybe I should make the case that The Office was overall a good show. I don't know if that's taken for granted by everyone, but I'm not going to do that. What I will say is I think a lot of people thought The Office would go downhill after Steve Carell left near the end of the 7th season. I was actually not one of those people. Obviously, I was wrong. But I was right about one thing, which is by the time Steve Carell left, the show was already going downhill. But I still maintain that it was a great comedy for about the first 5/9 of its run. And I can point you to the exact point where the decline began. It was the penultimate episode of season 5, Cafe Disco. So by the time The Office ended, finally, we were all pretty sick of it. So it's easy to forget what a big deal it was for a while there for NBC and for sitcoms in general. And that actually became part of the problem. NBC ordered so many episodes and supersized episodes that there wasn't enough funny to fill up the time. Cafe Disco aired late in the show's fifth season, which was also the year NBC aired an hour-long episode after the Super Bowl. In fact, this was the 25th episode of that season, and I'll do the math for you. That is too many. The show had just wrapped up the Michael Scott Paper Company arc, where Michael and Pam and Ryan go off on their own while Idris Elba – am I pronouncing that right? He's running the Scranton branch of Dunder Mifflin during that time. So the resolution of that arc should have been the season finale, but apparently there were still more episodes in network's order, and Pam had to still find out she was having that damn baby. So the writers must have been exhausted at this point, and it shows. Here's the cold open, which, as was often the case, centers around a prank.
Oh my god! I can't believe it! I just won an art contest!
Yeah, that's Erin. She was the receptionist at the time. She would replace Pam, who was, you know. And there's Dwight bringing...
Shut up.
I got her. Oh!
Not cool, Dwight.
Not cool, man.
Yeah, that's the whole bit. That's the whole thing. So it depends on knowing that Pam used to be an aspiring artist, and that was kind of her thing for a while. And it would be fine if it were funny. But the writers never finished the bit, so Rainn Wilson had to carry it all on his own. You heard him laboring mightily to keep that afloat there. In fact, the actors have to do a lot of that in this episode. So anyway, the setup for the whole episode proper involves what Michael has been doing with the formerly vacant space downstairs from the office.
I still have the lease on the Michael Scott Paper Company, so occasionally I will sneak down here for a little coffee and dancing. I actually dance all the time. Tiptoeing around corporate, it is a ballet. When I am breaking all the rules, I'm breakdancing. And espresso.
Yeah, so during that clip, there's a little montage of Michael dancing, which is kind of a signal that instead of a script, we're going to end up getting a televised dance party with the cast of The Office. So Michael's next step is to try to get the staff to relax with him a little bit, which goes about as expected.
Michael, we have a lot of work to do.
What?
Work.
Ugh, oh, God. What happened to you people? We're just office drones. We are office drones. All we do is work. Is work.
If you don't take out his battery, he just keeps going all day.
Oh, no, your battery fell out.
I was just learning to love.
Yep, these are the jokes. Meanwhile, Jim and Pam are being unusually cloying, even for them.
There are other reasons to go to Ohio.
We're getting married today.
So it turns out it's the closest place to get a marriage license without a 3-day waiting period.
Tell them how it happened.
Okay, so we're going through all the wedding plans, and boy, it is complicated.
And very expensive.
Very expensive, because you say you want a small wedding, and that's great, but then you have to invite...
You can't leave anyone out.
No one.
Okay, just get to the good part.
Right. Oh, so this morning, we are having breakfast together, and I just looked up from my cereal, and I said, you know what I want to do today? I want to marry you.
I had just woken up. I didn't look cute. That's how I knew he meant it.
Shut up, you two. So anyway, after Erin finds Michael downstairs at his little dance space and gets dragged into dancing with him, Michael has an epiphany.
I think that I have figured a way to get you guys out of your funk.
What?
Funk is the problem and the solution.
That makes sense.
I have taken my downstairs office and I have turned it into a place to hang out, a place where unattractive and attractive people can get together to meet, to greet, to see the ones that you love, to love the ones that you see.
Is this our punishment for not wanting to have lunch with you?
Why don't you get over lunch, Oscar? Everybody else is past it.
All work and no play makes Michael a dull boy.
This is like a haunted coffee house
No,
thing?
Dwight is confusing you. That it's more of a disco.
Like a haunted disco.
With coffee, but without the haunting.
It's a combo dance house coffee bar.
It is a daytime disco on the ground floor of an industrial office building.
It's a cafe disco.
Exactly.
So like a disco cafe.
What? No. No, not even close. I can't force you to go down, but I can entice you. I'm going to be down there. Aaron will be down there from time to time, and all you can eat espresso.
Yeah, I noticed at some point Michael learned how to pronounce espresso. Anyway, as with most of Michael's ideas, this one fails to take off.
Now I know what the founders of Philip Morris felt like. You just want to give people a smooth, fun way to relax, and suddenly you're just some terrible monster.
Eventually, Phyllis gives in and decides to break the seal. When she dances with Michael, she ends up breaking her back instead.
God! Oh, no. Oh, wow! What did you do? you didn't do that. Yeah. You're okay. Let's lie down. You want to go down? All right.
Whoa, sorry.
Okay. That's okay. Backs aren't a problem. Okay, sweetie.
Right here.
Hey. I got your text. Who's Philip?
No.
Who tipped you over? Was it Philip?
Hilarious. It does, though, lead to one nice little meta moment from Angela.
Can you please go back to work instead of masterminding these situations wherein we hurt ourselves?
So Michael gives up, orders Aaron to go shut it down, but instead Aaron ends up dancing down there with Kelly, ridiculously, at which point they're spotted by an employee of Vance Refrigeration, which leads to this bit of what passes for repartee.
There's girls in there.
Where?
The other room.
What other room?
Down the hall.
There's girls in there?
What did I just say?
Give me my sandwich?
Forget the sandwich.
Girls!
It's like a comedy bit written by Google Translate. So from here on out, it's way too many protracted dance sequences with most of the staff supposedly partying in an office building in the middle of the day, sober. As if. And at least there's one person who hates this as much as I do.
Hey, Angela! Welcome to
Angela, may I interest you in a triple espresso or perhaps a dance?
No, I didn't come down here to get wet and wild. I just need you to sign these.
Oh, all right. There you go.
No, you need to sign
No. Here is the deal. One signature for every song.
Look, I hate to be that person, but I just don't like the general spirit of music.
I know. Angela, a lot of people doubted Cafe Disco at first, but it is a magical place. You have to give it a chance. If these walls could talk, they would say, this is a magical place. You are safe here. We have talking walls. We're not going to eat you. No!
So the dancing continues, and I remember thinking at the time that the purpose of this episode must have been to sell a soundtrack album. There's the continuing subplot with the injured Phyllis upstairs, who's getting a therapeutic massage from Dwight.
I'm going to go with the python.
But the rattler's so scary.
No, please. I find the rattle soothing. Puts me to sleep.
I think Bob's going to cheat on me with his new secretary.
What's so funny?
When I say it out loud, it's so silly.
Yep, that's that whole thing resolved. So the high point, if you can call it that, is Andy and Kelly in a dance battle. And finally, Jim and Pam decide to stop in at Cafe Disco while they're headed out to elope.
I think maybe I want a wedding.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Shut up, he said.
I said shut up. Yeah, so anyway, we all know now that the office ran out of steam, out of ideas, and after a while it was hardly ever even set in the office. It became a ghost of its former self, revolving door cast, no clear lead, no clear direction. But I think it started right here, season 5, episode 25, Cafe Disco, where instead of jokes we got Weirdo Dance Party. So, no thank you.
So cheesy.
Shut up, he said.
Shut up, Cafe Disco.
Well argued, Jeff. When we got to the end of this, watching it, I was like, yeah, that's a good call. I mean, I might have put the start of the decline in that episode. I think it was maybe either earlier this season or possibly the season before when Michael is following his GPS in his car and drives into a lake where it was like, well, now he's Homer Simpson. But this is definitely a more this failure encompasses everybody in a way that one didn't. it was such a drag. You're right. After the Michael Scott Paper Company thing, I mean, that storyline had its problems too, but at least it was different in a somewhat plausible way, including the ways that it didn't work. I won't get into it because that's not what we're talking about. But this really does feel like, oh shit, we forgot to write an episode. I guess we have to do this. Like, the closest thing to plot is the Jim and Pam thing. And as you keep saying, who cares? Both of you shut up. I don't think there's any argument one could make for this not being a bad episode of a good show. Yes, Dave.
Oh, I was just going to go next.
Okay, I'm done. Dave.
This episode shows the difference between a show about nothing and what Seinfeld does. Because this episode was really about nothing, and it really shows where Seinfeld, everybody likes to say it's about nothing, but it's not. It's about something. And I think a show about nothing is Cafe Disco. That said, in a universe in which the episode called Scott's Tots exists,
Ooh.
I can't in good conscience put something else in the no-nack for The Office.
Shit.
Joe.
Oh my God, Dave, you totally turned my thinking around. I forgot about Scott's Tots.
Yeah, Scott's Tots is pretty bad.
Oh my God.
I didn't super hate this episode, actually. I thought it was, as like a harbinger of bad things to come, I like definitely that. I think this is the mark of, to me, a show that was coasting and figured that it could. I feel I was surprised to realize that this had come so quickly on the heels of the Michael Scott Paper Company arc. I feel like that's why they had the space there, right? Because that had been utilized by the Michael Scott Paper Company, which was, to me, the last sort of bit of greatness from The Office was that arc, I thought, was really, really good. And that it so quickly sort of, God, I bet you can hear those sirens.
Yep.
My ride's here.
That fucking loud.
TV cops.
They're coming to take me away for not hating this episode. so I was surprised that these harbingers of what was to come came so soon after that. But I feel like at this point still, I am probably your sliver of a target market for, if you don't really have much to do, throw in a dance party. I'm not going to hate it all that much. I still got a lot of stuff that I could sort of, enjoy out of what the hell's Mindy Kaling's character again? Kelly. Jesus, it's been that long. And I liked a lot of the position that Phyllis puts herself in when she throws her back out, to me also was kind of funny, where she's like in like halfway through a Funky Monkey kind of splay out, which was, I liked that.
It reminded me of the guy who gets stabbed in the airplane Saturday Night Fever scene, where he's like trying to point to his back and everybody just copies him. Yeah.
Yes. And I tend to give Jim and Pam a lot more leeway than a lot of people do. I feel like I could see where I get it, but also it didn't hit me in that visceral, like, God make them stop talking kind of place that I feel like it hits a lot of other people. I think there were a lot of other episodes of The Office that ended up driving me away before it was over. More so than this one. It's not good, but to me, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Sarah.
Overruled. I hear what you're saying about the dance party, but that was really a lot of filler. The laboring mightily is exactly right. Like, just Rainn Wilson strained. And, like, even though it's intentional, it's still not functional. This was uncomfortable to watch, but not in the way that they wanted, I think. It was off-putting. I don't appreciate being asked to agree with Angela. Excuse me. And it's not good. That said, I don't like the show anyway. And this stuff, like, the problems with this episode are, I feel, not that much worse than any other episode. I didn't feel like it was that much more egregious. I've only seen a handful of other Office episodes, and there's a reason for that, which is that the show is not for me. So this is bad, but I don't think it's demonstrably worse. Like, The Office, to me, is not a good show. I know. I get it. To me, it's not a good show. So to say that this episode is much worse doesn't track for me personally. So Yeah. I mean, excellent presentation. I very much enjoyed your disgust, but I don't see how this dips that far below the level of other offices, offices that I saw in my life.
All right. So, Sarah, can I take that as a no vote?
That is a no vote.
All Sorry, right. Jeff. Joe, what vote ye?
No.
Tara Ariano?
Oh, my God. All right. Can I have a question about the no-knack theory? Is the idea, could we have conceivably more than one episode?
Yes, we have decided.
Okay, all
originally
right.
The no-knack was the one episode, and then we decided that it just needs to be an egregious example of a bad episode of a quality show. So in theory, we could have two.
All right, to take your point, Scott Stotts is really fucking terrible too, but so is this for different but also terrible reasons, so I'm going to vote yes.
All right, I vote no. I think Scott Stotts is so terrible that the disparity between the two makes this one look good.
Wow.
I'm sorry. That is not no-knack material.
I try. You got me.
Tough but fair.
There's losers and winners, and they don't provide, but nothing is stoppable. Nothing is stoppable. This song is called Losers and Winners.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
That was I edited that together from a outtake of her face-off song.
Amazing.
Yeah. So cute.
Ellie. I have our winner this week, and our winner is Peter Serafinowicz, because The Tick is coming back on Netflix, if I recall correctly. Is that right?
Yes. No, Amazon.
Amazon. The Tick is coming back in live-action form on Amazon, and he will be playing the titular Tick. I approve of this, although I also loved Patrick Warburton in the role.
The early Tick comics, like the first few arcs, are so funny, and they never really captured the same... I mean, the Tick show was fine. It was funny.
The cartoon or the live-action?
The cartoon and the live-action, I thought, were both funny in slightly different ways. But if you can track down the first couple issues of The Tick, I would say up to the ones that are called Karma Tornado, I think, they are definitely worth reading. The Tick is actually like more genuinely insane in those.
Uh-huh. And sub winner to Joe Reed's friend Griffin Newman, who will also be in that show.
Yay!
And a loser of the week?
I have our loser, Janice Dickinson, has been diagnosed with breast cancer, which is terrible. That does not make her a loser. We wish her the best for a speedy blah, blah, blah. However, I don't feel... Excuse me. She's making me sick. I don't feel that she should let the breast cancer star in a reality show called The Doctors, but that's what she's doing, and it's starting next week. So, I don't know. Maybe take some time for yourself, you know. Don't live on camera, Madonna.
Well, maybe this is her way of taking time for herself.
That brings up an interesting question, which is this.
Oh, boy.
Do you know what other terrible event also brings up opportunities? It's game time.
Oh.
All right, this is the fifth game time of the season. We're back to regulation game. Joe is on top with 3 points.
Woo.
Tara has one. Both Sarah and value guests are looking for their first victory of the season today. And today we are playing Tom, Dick, or Harry, Jane, Kate, or Mary from Rob Loveboat Hartman.
Oh, Rob!
Who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Okay. In Tom, Dick, or Harry, Jane, Kate, or Mary, players must guess TV shows which feature actors or characters with those first names.
Okay.
Example, see Dick grow up in a whorehouse. See Dick steal his lieutenant's identity. Answer?
Oh, Mad Men?
Yes.
You can ask for a hint, which is the full name of the actor or character in the clue. So the hint in that case would be Dick Whitman. And then you would give the name. Okay. 2 points for guessing the TV show. 1 point after a hint.
Okay.
All right. You can also get a bonus point if you give the other half of the equation off the bat. So give the actor if the clue was a character or the other way around is
Got
how
it.
It's going to work. In the example, John Hamm. So the question is potentially worth 3 points there. That makes sense?
What are the women's names again? Sorry, Jane, Kate, Mary?
Tom, Dick, or Harry.
Yep.
Jane, Kate, or Mary.
Got it.
Here we go. Let's throw it to Picky. We will.
Just trailed off there.
We will start with Tara.
Thanks, Picky. Picky recently had a RAM upgrade, and I don't think the RAM is completely seated in the slot there. So I think maybe there's just a little gap there. Slot. You know how these things work, guys. Oh, sure. All right. So we're going to go. Tara, then we're going to go to Sarah, Jeff, and then Joe. Are we ready to play Tom, Dick, or Harry, Jane, Kate, or Mary?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right. Tara.
Yep.
See Jane star on The Girly Show. See Jane star on The Girly Show.
Oh, Jane Krakowski of 30 Rock.
Okay, so give the show first, since that's the answer.
All right, so that was
3 points.
Okay.
30 Rock is correct. See Jane star on The Girly Show, so we're talking about the actor, because,
got it.
Okay, Sarah D. Bunting. See Harry start a TV department. Nobody likes Harry.
That is Mad Men. And now, what else do I need to give you?
You want to give me the character.
No, Harry is the character. She needs to give the actor's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. What is that actor's name? I don't know the actor's name. Boo. Sorry, I don't know.
Rich Summer.
Yes.
Jeff.
Ready.
See Tom solve crimes in Hawaii. Nice mustache, Tom.
That should be Magnum P.I., and it was Tom Selleck as Thomas Magnum.
Correct. All right, Joe. See Kate work for the Washington Herald. See Kate get pushed in front of a train.
Okay, House of Cards is the show. Kate Mara playing Zoe Barnes.
Nice.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
See Mary let her granddaughter live with her in Capeside.
That's Dawson's Creek. And the actor is Mary Beth Peel.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, Grams. I don't remember her name on the...
Grams is the answer.
Okay.
Evelyn Ryan.
Got it.
Yep. Sarah D. Bunting. See Jane married to a doctor. See Jane in an L.A. apartment complex full of drama.
See Jane. Oh, okay.
The show?
That is Jane. Oh,
what's
God.
The show first?
The show is Melrose Place.
Yep.
She is Jane Mancini.
Who plays?
That's a character.
Who's played by?
The character is Jane Mancini. Played by... Oh, my God. With her bowl cut. Every other name of the cast is like flying past my eyeballs right now, and I can't think of her name.
Josie Bissett?
Yep, Josie Bissett.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Jeff Alexander. See Tom work for Leslie in Pawnee.
Oh, Parks and Recreation. Aziz Ansari is Tom Haverford.
Correct for 3 points. Joe Reed. See Harry Mara Deborah Messing. Why, Harry, why?
This is Will and Grace. Harry Connick Jr. playing Leo.
That's good enough. Leo.
Sure, okay.
Also Marcus. Yeah.
Marcus, yeah.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
See Tom go undercover in high school.
Oh, it's this 21 Jump Street. And it's Johnny Depp as Tom Hansen.
That is correct. I never would have pulled that character's name. All right, it is back to Sarah. See Mary be a cheerleader at Jacqueline Kennedy High School. See Mary have Delta Burke for a mother.
Hint.
Your hint is Mary Cherry.
Oh, all right, that is popular.
That is worth 1 point. All right, Jeff Alexander. See Dick run an inn in Vermont.
Okay, that was Newhart. Bob Newhart is Dick Loudon.
That is correct. 3 points there. Nice job. Okay, Joe, see Kate work at Dunder Mifflin. See Kate drink.
The Office, Meredith. Kate Flannery plays Meredith, whatever Meredith's like.
Correct. Palmer.
Right.
Harry.
Tara Ariano.
Yes, sir.
See Harry threaten to leave Springfield. See Harry return to Springfield.
Oh, The Simpsons. Harry Shearer playing any number of characters. Monty Burns.
That's okay. Good enough. Ned Flanders, Monty Burns, Principal Skinner, probably the big ones. Back to Sarah. See Tom move into the Susan B. Anthony Hotel. See Tom dressed like a lady.
Oh, that is Tom Hanks on Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies is correct. The character, and we'll have two
answers. Name was...
God, what was it?
Kevin.
Oh, really close, actually. Kip Wilson or Buffy?
Oh!
Yeah. All right, Joe.
Nope, Jeff.
I mean, Jeff, sorry. See Jane be an MD in the Wild West.
Is that Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman?
Correct.
Jane Seymour is Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman?
Yeah, that's good enough, I guess. Dr. Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Quinn.
Right. Yeah. Oh, sure.
Mike.
Yeah, of course, her name was
Michaela, I think.
Michaela, yeah. All right, this is going to bring us into our first score break.
This one is for Joe.
And it is for Joe, correct. See Harry be sheriff in a small Washington town. See Harry work with Special Agent Cooper.
Okay,
The show.
Well, the show is Twin Peaks.
That's good for two.
And Sheriff Harry S. Truman was played by the actor
known as the following, which is to come
Michael Ompkin.
Yeah, nice pull.
All right, well
Michael
done,
Michael Ompkin of Making Love fame with lots Harry Hamlin.
Lots of points so far, so let's get the scores.
Yeah, it's very tight. Sarah has 7 points, and Jeff and I and Joe are all tied with 12 each.
Excellent. All right, continuing with number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
For Tara. See Mary in an apartment building in D.C. See Mary be friends with Jack A.
This is 227. And Mary was played by Marla Gibbs? Okay, oh, good.
Nice.
Correct.
Nice.
Mary Jenkins.
Okay.
Yeah. For Sarah, see Kate be Deputy National Security Advisor. See Kate probably vote for Vintnik. Vinick.
Oh, God. Okay, it's the West Wing. And it's Mary McCormack?
Correct. 3 points. Character Kate Harper. Jeff Alexander, as we call him. All his friends call him Jeff Alexander.
Jeff.
And here you go. It is number... See Kate in prison. See Kate run the cafeteria.
Orange is the New Black. Kate Mulgrew as Red.
Correct for 3 points.
Nice.
Joe Reed. See Tom buy a bowling alley. See Tom pursue Julie Bolin. Why, Tom, why?
Bowen, not Bolin.
Oh, sorry.
Julie Bolin. What's she doing? She bowling.
Yeah.
This is Ed.
Yeah.
Tom Kavanaugh played Ed.
Yeah, that was
is that good
enough?
Do I have to give the last name?
Do you know the last name?
I
does
don't.
Does anyone?
Stevens.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Who cares?
Tara Ariano.
Yes, sir.
See Harry live on the east side next door to George and Louise. See Harry be British.
Okay, it's the Jeffersons. Fuck if I know who played him. I have no idea.
Harry Bentley is the character played by Paul Benedict.
Okay.
Paul Benedict.
Oh, right.
Good
sure.
for 2 points. Sarah Bunting, see Mary survive a viral apocalypse. See Mary meet Phil in Tucson.
Phil?
Yes.
Phil.
Doesn't matter. Hint?
Mary Steenburgen.
Oops. I don't know. Joan of Arcadia?
That's the last man on Earth. Yeah. She plays Gail, and the fill in question is Will Forte. Okay, to Jeff Alexander. See Kate in a love triangle with McDreamy. See Kate get a spinoff.
That is... wait, do you want the spinoff or the original show?
Either one's fine.
All right, it was Grey's Anatomy, then she was on Private Practice. It was Kate Walsh.
Yeah.
As...
I'll give you a hint.
The snapping.
I'll give you an extra hint. Doctor.
Okay, thank you. Oh, it was like some dude's name, wasn't it? All right, I'm letting the clock run out. I'm going to hit myself. Sorry.
Dr. Addison Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
I knew it.
Right. It was two guys' names.
Joe Reed.
Yeah, clearly.
Yes.
See Jane be mom to three sons with Brian as dad.
With who as dad?
Brian.
Be mom to three sons with Brian as dad. I'm going to need the hint.
All right. Jane Kaczmarek.
Oh, God. Malcolm in the Middle.
Correct. She played Lois. Okay, Tara Ariano.
Yep.
See Harry at the helm of the starship. See Harry lost in the Delta Quadrant.
Hint?
Harry Kim.
Nope. Does not help.
Space.
You want to take a guess?
Is it Enterprise?
You're close. Nope. It is Star Trek Voyager.
Okay.
That's the one where they got lost. Nobody cared. That's what they flew the USS shovel. The spaceship looked like a shovel. It was terrible. It was a terrible show all around, guys.
Let's talk about it more.
All right. Well, see, there is this guy.
He was actually a tactical officer.
That wouldn't have made a difference.
I suppose. All right, Tara, do you want those points?
No.
See Mary live on the frontier, Sarah. See Mary live on the frontier. See Mary go blind.
Oh. Little House on the Prairie. It's the show. And Mary Ingalls is played by... Oh, how many times did I see these credits as a kid?
Oh, my God. I will be so impressed. You will get 50 Tara points if you know this one.
Oh, that's a lot of Tara points.
They have no cash value. And no value in this game either. Just keep that in mind.
Nina. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you had the right letter. Melissa Sue Anderson.
Oh, damn it!
All right, Jeff. See Kate win an Oscar. See Kate need work and star in a TV version of a Joan Crawford vehicle.
Wow. can you read that again, please?
See Kate win an Oscar. See Kate need work and star in a TV version of a Joan Crawford vehicle.
Can I have a clue, please?
Kate Winslet.
Now I got nothing.
Tara, you watch this.
Yeah, Mildred Pierce.
Mildred Pierce, correct. Joe Reed, see Harry be a judge and an amateur magician.
Night Court?
Correct.
Harry Anderson's the actor. The judge is Harry. I don't know what his last name is. I don't know if that counts.
No, not close enough. Judge Harry T. Stone. Harry T.
That's
Stone.
That's it.
Tara Ariano, see Kate fly on Oceanic Flight 815. See Kate on the island.
Boo. Lost. And as Kate, it was Evangeline Annie Hall Lily.
Yeah. Quickly tell that story.
I'm sure we've told it on the podcast before, but the first time we came to Hawaii, Evangeline Lilly was at the airport in Oahu where we were changing planes, and her driver had her name on his sign as Annie Hall. That was her anonymous name. What a douche. Moving on.
Wow. Yeah. Try hard.
What an asshole.
All right. Jeff Alexander.
Yep. No.
No. I've skipped Sarah. Oh. Sarah. Nope. See Mary work for the Major K Squad. See Mary replace Bogosian.
Oh, yeah. Law and Order, Criminal Intent. And it was Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Right.
As Lieutenant Zoe someone. It was probably not Lieutenant, it was Captain. I don't know the character's
name. Oh, you're really close. Captain Zoe is correct.
I think she should get it for that. Jeez.
Yeah?
Great.
Yeah.
Captain Zoe.
All right. Wait, Joe, so Jeff, do you acquiesce to this point giving?
Yes.
I do. She even said Master Antonio.
Captain Zoe Callis.
Callis.
Callis. Yeah. She acted hard and developed her last name. All right. Now it's Jeff's turn.
I enjoyed that one.
See Harry working for Mackenzie Brockman. See Harry romance Grace Van Owen.
That was L.A. Law, and it was Harry Hamlin. He played Michael Cusack.
Wow.
Did he ever?
Nice.
Whoa, wow.
All right.
Second mention in this game for Harry Hamlin. Can he get a third?
All right. Bring us into our second score break for Joe. CK be one of a trio of investigators. CK be the smart one.
Oh. A trio of investigators. Huh.
Kate, be the smart one. Need that hint?
I'll take a hint.
Kate Jackson.
Oh, Jesus. Charlie's Angels.
Good for 1 point. She played Sabrina Duncan, which is a fantastic name.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd have gotten that either.
Yeah. All right, Tara. Oh, wait. Score break. Score break.
This is one close-ass game, you guys. Sarah has 15. Joe has 19. Jeff and I are tied with 20 apiece.
Wow. Excellent. All right. Back to Tara.
Yes.
We have, let's see, we got 16 questions left.
Okay.
See Mary be Stephen Collins' daughter. See Mary do anything to get off the show.
That's Seventh Heaven. And as Mary Camden is Jessica Biel. Okay. Took a second. I was about to say Alba. The other Jessica.
Yeah.
Sarah Bunting. See Kate work homicide. See Kate work with Nathan Fillion.
Castle.
2 points.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's fine. Stana Katic. Or Katic.
Oh,
Canada's
yeah.
own.
You know, her.
Stana Katic.
The actor, the character is Kate Beckett.
Yep.
Jeff Alexander, here you go. See Mary marry Harry Dean Stanton as wife number six. See Mary marry Harry Dean Stanton as wife number six.
Okay, well, I'm thinking Big Love. I can't think of who the Mary would be. No, I can't think of the name.
Mary Kay Place played Adeline Grant.
Right. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Adeline,
yeah. Yep. Joe Reed, see Tom work in the counterterrorism unit. See Tom work with Jack.
Oh, well, the show's 24.
It's good for two.
Tom. God, so many people cycled in and out of that
show.
Seriously,
God. Turned
over to CTU.
Tom.
Also, mean of Picky not to give this one to Jeff. It's very cruel.
That's true.
I'm stuck too. I can't think of it.
And I don't even.
I'm calling it. Did you want to just throw in a male actor from that show?
I don't have it. I don't have anything on my head.
Tom Nard.
Tom Baker, as played by Daniel Day Kim.
Was not watching by that point.
No.
Tara Ariano.
I was like, Thomas Calabro. That would have been a better show. Yes.
I was also thinking that. Sigh.
See Jane be divorced. See Jane share a brownstone with her friend.
Okay, that's Kate and Allie. And Jane Curtin as... Allie? Oh, good.
Yay!
All right, Sarah. See Jane's gay husband leave her. See Jane on Netflix.
Say that again.
See Jane's gay husband leave her. See Jane on Netflix. This is for Sarah.
For Sarah.
Oh, God. Can't remember the other lady's name. It's Frankie and something. It's Jane Fonda. I got nothing. Sorry.
No.
Grace and Frankie. Grace and Frankie.
Get.
Played by Jane Fonda. All right, now it is Jeff Alexander's turn. Here is your clue. See Jane in Seattle. See Jane tend to Martin.
Wow. Oh, Jane leaves on Frasier. She played Daphne Moon.
And you got 3 points there,
well
sir.
Well done.
Joe Reed, see Jane be the coach of the Cheerios. See Jane win an Emmy.
That'd be Glee. Jane Lynch is Sue Sylvester.
3 points.
Nice.
Tara Ariano.
Yep.
See Harry work for the LAPD. See Harry on Amazon.
Sorry, Sarah. This is Bosch.
Bosch.
And it's as Harry Bosch, Titus Welliver.
3 points. Sarah Bunting. See Harry run Sunnydale. See Harry and Faith.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Harry Groner Grainer as Mayor Wilkins.
The mayor, Mayor Wilkins, correct.
Well done. Yep.
Jeff, see Harry in the Korean War. See Harry step in for McLean Stevenson.
Harry Morgan played Colonel Sherman T. Potter on MASH.
That is good for three
Sherman
points.
Sherman T., look at you.
Amazing.
All right, Joe Reed. See Harry have a serial killer for a son. See Harry teach him the code.
Dexter. And Harry was played by James Remar.
Nice. Well done. Okay. Score break. Everybody's got one question left.
Oh, my God. All right. Sarah has 20 points. Joe has 27 points. Jeff has 28 points. I have 29 points.
All right. It is still anybody's game.
So close.
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Here's your last question.
Okay.
See Mary produce the news. See Mary have spunk.
Okay. It's the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And that's Mary Tyler Moore as Mary Richards.
That is good for 3 points.
Maryception.
Sarah Bunting, your last question. See Mary marry her cousin. See Mary manage the estate.
Downton Abbey.
Court rat.
And that is the one whose name I always forget as Lady Mary. I don't know.
Well, you got the 2 points. You missed the additional point. That was Michelle Dockery.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Jeff Alexander, your last question. See Mary be president of the colonies in space.
yeah, those Battlestar Galactica with Mary McDonnell as, or Mary, what's her name, as Laura Roslin.
Correct. 3 points. All right. Last question of the game for Joe Reed. See Dick live in Neptune. See Dick be Logan's friend.
Oh, Dick Casablancas. Veronica Mars. Ryan Hansen is Dick Casablancas.
You are correct. All right, that's the game. Let's hear the scores.
Sarah ended with 22. Joe had 30. Jeff had 31. I had 32.
Ooh, what a squeaker.
Congratulations.
That
nice.
Was close.
That was a fun game. All right.
Good game, everybody.
I got a couple shits and giggles.
Woo!
I thought the game might be close, so I had two. So here we go. Four, let's see. Let's do this. Since we have six names, each of these is going to be worth 6 Dave points.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
All right? Because the game is Tom, Dick, or Harry, Jane, Kate, or Mary. First person to shout out. Let's do this, just the show, okay? See Dick have 8 kids. See Dick marry Betty Buckley.
It is enough.
Correct.
Dang.
6 points for value guess. Congratulations. Here's our second one. See Dick come to Earth. See Dick teach college.
Third rock from the sun.
And Joe gets 6 Dave points. All right, congratulations, Tara.
Tara! Tara.
Me.
Yeah. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We popped our head into Hell's Kitchen to see what was cooking and did the...
Dave is cracking his neck. He's going to try this again.
It's so well written, too.
Well, that's it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We popped our head into Hell's Kitchen to see what was cooking in Daredevil's second seasoning. While Liv reported on the monsters on the opposite coast in her face-off report, and the blotter got to the bottom of Helter Skelter before it went back to the top of the slide, where we turned around and went for a ride around the dial with stops at Married at First Sight, The Flash, and Supergirl, The Real O'Neills, Untucked, and Night of the Grizzly. Jeff unsuccessfully pitched us The Office's Cafe Disco for the Nonak. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, baby, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
to see all the pictures I colored during Daredevil, go to Instagram.com/Tara Ariano.
Sarah D. Funtick.
That was a nice bit of business with Back to the Top. Just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you. Joe Reed.
Nice not seeing you, Daredevil.
And Jeff Alexander.
Glavin.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
It's going to take weeks to process this shit.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.